It was a great night. The Bulls won the game. It was a low-scoring game. I think 85-74 was the final score. But it gave a lot of people the opportunity to see Michael Jordan in action for the final time in Atlanta, who otherwise would only be able to see him on TV.
That was Art Trish, longtime executive who spent 23 seasons with the Atlanta Hawks. He's today's guest. Welcome to Dan Dickow's Quarantine Series on the Scorebook Live Today podcast. As the world, particularly the world of sports, is shut down due to the coronavirus, we're ramping things up a notch here at Scorebook Live. Every weekday, Dan interviews an expert in the world of sports, from star hoopers and coaches like Steve Kerr, Jamal Crawford, and Doug Christie, to seven-time Mr. Olympia bodybuilder Phil Heath. We hope you're entertained and maybe learn a thing or two as we navigate these uncertain times. The easiest way to tune in is by subscribing. In addition to our weekly Washington High School Sports News and Conversation podcast released Thursdays, hosted by myself, Andy Bueller, fellow reporter Todd Millis, Dan is bringing you interviews just like this one delivered 5 days a week. Head to wherever you get your podcast, subscribe for free, and while you're there, leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. Before we get to Dan's interview today, a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are. Now, Dan Dickow.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington. Today, our podcast during these uncertain times in our nation and across the world, coming to you with our quarantine series where we bring you an expert in the world of sports. A lot of times these experts are coaches, former coaches, players, maybe front office executives. Today, we've got one of those, a front office executive, spent over 20 years with the Atlanta Hawks before spending some time in the broadcast world as a producer, as well as a sports talk radio show host. I got to know him my first couple of years in the NBA while down with the Atlanta Hawks, Art Trish. Art, how's life? And thanks for joining.
Appreciate it, Dan. Good to see you again. I know we've stayed in contact off and on Twitter over the years, catching up, seeing how both of us are doing. And like everyone right now, you're just chilling and relaxing and hoping we're able to get through this current situation in our country and the world as best we can, and hope that the numbers continue to decrease of those infected by the disease, and that the deaths level off a little bit. It's a strange way to say level off when over 45,000 people or more have died, but we pray and hope that those of us who have either known someone who's been affected continue to remain strong and prayerful during this time.
Well, we had a chance to catch up offline a little bit before recording our interview here, and I learned a little bit more about you in your background growing up of being an athlete, but then getting to college and trying to kind of map out a career path for you. I mentioned, you know, a lot of experts that we've had here on our podcast have gone the front office, the executive route in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Now, most people that are involved in professional sports or college sports have a love for the game, and a lot of them go from playing at a high level into a different position. For someone who maybe looks at themselves as a young kid and maybe a high school student athlete, says, I'm never going to play at the professional level. I might not even play at the college level, but I want to be involved in sports. I love it. There's nothing more exciting to me than being involved in it. Give us a little bit of background on how you got involved, and what advice would you give to somebody in these day and ages of getting involved?
Yeah, I always wanted to play sports as far as I could take it. growing up. I played high school and basketball and baseball, and basketball certainly was my first love. My school didn't have a football team, so there wasn't an avenue for me to pursue that. But I was also working as a student manager, or ball boy, at Tulane University, which was not that far from my home, maybe a mile from that location. And I would go over there and help the student managers out and the trainers in various odd tasks after their practices, helping to clean the locker room, putting out uniforms for the next day's practice and stuff like that. And never knew I would be able to make a career of it, because I was desiring to get into the sports communication field and to become a sports broadcaster at one time, because I loved watching how guys delivered the sports on TV, whether it was live action sports or commentary on the local sportscasts. And it was and I felt I was very knowledgeable about sports, and it was a path that I wanted to pursue. And so luckily for me, I was able to obtain a scholarship at Tulane to be a student manager, did 4 years with the basketball program there, and made a lot of contacts. This business is about relationships. And I learned even at a young age that meeting people, establishing contacts from various schools and various programs around the country, you never knew if it would open doors for you down the line, or if you would use those people as mentors as well. I was able to broaden my career upon graduation when my boss at Tulane, the SID at the time, offered me a position with him upon graduation. And I didn't have a job at the time. The sports broadcasting opportunity I would have to pursue with an internship. And so I didn't know if it would make sense for me to turn down a job since I had one at the time. And if I wanted to get into sports broadcasting, maybe somewhere down the road, if the sports administration then of sports communications didn't work out, then I would do that. And so I became his assistant sports information director, worked at Tulane for 3 additional years. I had been with that program 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, and then 3 additional years upon graduation. So at that point in time, I was itching to maybe leave because we had a basketball scandal and our basketball program was shut down. And it was a program that was obviously near and dear to my heart, but I didn't know how long the program would be curtailed. And I decided to maybe give that broadcasting itch an opportunity. But based on those contacts, as I mentioned, that I made over the years, the former assistant AD at Louisville had moved to LSU, and he and I had always had a good relationship between the games we played against each other, and he offered me a position to join LSU's athletic program. Now, LSU, as you see, I'm wearing an LSU shirt to this day, was our arch rival, and I never thought I would work there, but it was a way for me to advance my career based on those relationships. I looked at it from a let's see where this takes us next, instead of worrying about the Tulane LSU rivalry. And so ended up spending 3 years there with that program. I worked various tasks as an assistant in football, headed up the basketball SID PR side my last year there, and then went on to the NFL with the Detroit Lions as an assistant PR director. Spent a year there, and that's when I really knew I was ready to get into sports broadcasting, because when I was with the Lions, the football season just wasn't long enough for me from a work standpoint. I mean, you're working from roughly August to the end of the season, and if you don't make the playoffs, then you're done in December. But I had met up with some people with the Atlanta Hawks over my years in the business, and they knew I was a big NBA fan. The head job with the Hawks was available. My ex-boss was working in Atlanta. He put in a good word for me, went down for the interview for the head PR job, and the rest, as they say, was history. I ended up spending 23 years with the franchise, had a lot of fun, wished I was still there, but something, a situation beyond my control ended up happening, and then I had to find a new job. Then I finally got into communications, the broadcasting end, producing a radio show at the CBS, then CBS affiliate here in Atlanta, was starting up. It was something new, and I produced there for 7 years, did an NBA podcast, obviously with my connections around the league, was able to have some guests here and there, and along with my co-host Andy Bunker, who used to work, ironically enough, outside, I think in the Portland area, and he's done a great job here in Atlanta, and he's now doing a midday show. But it the business was very fruitful, very beneficial to me. It was a lot of fun, enjoyed it tremendously. You made a lot of friends over the years, relationships that extend to this day. And I think one of the things I would recommend to those interested in getting into the sports field is to never give, first of all, get the best education you possibly can. And make sure that you want to push yourself as far as you can go. Having a graduate, I know there are a lot of graduate programs in sports administration these days. It's not necessary to have that, in my opinion, but it certainly doesn't hurt you. And a lot of programs are able to steer you into a lot of different areas of sport that can further your career if you don't have the ability to become a professional athlete and or become a head coach somewhere. You can certainly find a niche in the sports field that best suits you and can lead to a pretty rewarding career.
You know, I find a lot of advice in kind of you detailing out kind of the pathway of your career. And the biggest thing I think that stuck out is you said this business is all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And when you cultivate and develop those relationships, you might not know what is open as a available job or opportunity a year down the road. But if you have those relationships developed, you might be the first person that comes to mind when somebody's in a position to hire. What is a piece of advice that you would give a young high school or college student athlete as they are developing their network of relationships to stay front and center without asking for a job? Because I've heard from a number of people as well as be available, but not ask for a job.
I would probably say to define what area of interest best suits you. And don't define it to just one particular area, because sports is a vast network of opportunities. You can become a trainer, you can become an equipment guy, you can become an economist and work in the business office. There are community affairs departments. The college level is certainly much more vast in terms of opportunities, because you have over 320 or more Division I-A programs, compared to maybe from a professional sports angle, and I'm talking NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, maybe a little more than 110, 120 sports leagues or sports teams. So you don't have as many opportunities from that standpoint as you do pursuing something on the college level. That's not to say that you should give up dreams of working on the pro level if that's what you desire. And then from a high school standpoint, we know there are plenty of high schools all over the country that you can get your foot wet and get your start in moving into that field. But I would probably recommend, as high school students get closer to their college choice, to think about what they would like to do early in their careers, because whereas I knew communications was something I wanted to do the moment I went to college, I kind of fell into sports PR. And from that point on, I didn't know about sports PR until I got to college. But I obviously enjoyed it because I stayed in it for over 30 years or more. But it always broaden your horizons. Don't limit yourself to just one particular area, because that may not pan out for you because of the number of people also pursuing that same line of work, and you don't want to limit yourself. So make sure that you have an ability to help yourself become successful by choosing a lot of, or looking at a lot of, and doing a lot of research in a lot of different areas that may suit you in the sports field that you otherwise didn't think of beforehand.
Limit yourself, especially early in your career, as you're kind of learning what your path may eventually become. I want to kind of take a big picture look now about how the NBA changed during your 20-some years with the Atlanta Hawks. And the reason I ask this is because there's a ton of focus on that mid-1980s stretch as well as the 1997-98 season in the NBA because of the phenomenal Michael Jordan and Bulls Last Dance documentary. So in your time there, you saw a big time change in the how the league was promoted, how the message of the league was promoted. Are there any true or defining examples in your mind that just kind of took the league from, hey, this is a nice thing, into boom, it's possibly the greatest and best league in the world?
Oh, no question. I joined the NBA in 1989. The 1989-90 season was my first, and I was joining the league at the right time. And I say that because having interest in the league and following the league as much as I did as a kid, the New Orleans Jazz was a team that was in New Orleans for a few years before they moved to Utah and Salt Lake City. But the Lakers were my favorite team growing up. The Showtime era was my thing. I mean, you couldn't tell me anything about Magic Johnson in a negative way. And Jerry West was my favorite player growing up. And you'd see me, my mother would give me all the business about sitting during playoff games of having a Lakers sweatsuit on, like I was getting ready to check in off the bench from New Orleans. But I was like, look, you're not going to destroy my dream. Leave me alone. I'm in my element right now. But joining the league at when I did, it was a lot of fun because it was on the increase, because the 80s, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s was a rocky time in the NBA. They were going through a drug problem with some of its players. It was perverse throughout the league. CBS was the broadcast network of choice for the league, and they weren't willing to maybe pay top dollar for NBA games. The NBA Finals was shown on tape delay, believe that or not. When Magic Johnson's rookie year, when they beat the Philadelphia 76ers, game one of that finals and a few others were shown on tape delay. So, which meant in New Orleans, you would generally see a game 7 o'clock Central Time. That game was shown after local news. So 10:30 at night is when you saw the NBA Finals. Now think about that.
Wow.
We see games at 10:30 nowadays, but that's the second game of a ESPN or TNT or NBA TV network broadcast, because they've shown you an earlier game that started at 8 o'clock Eastern time or what have you. And so from that standpoint, that was one big and major aspect as to how the league took itself to another level, because once Magic was able to establish himself as the type of player he was, the NBA had good players before Magic Johnson showed up. But when he and Larry Bird entered the scene off of that dramatic NCAA Final Four, they elevated the league to heights they've been moving past even since that time. And then when you brought in players like Magic, Michael, and I'm losing sense of some of those players that were back in that era, but understand how great the league became. The interest grew. NBC, the broadcast on NBC, took it to yet another level. The iconic NBA on NBC theme song, people still hum it to this day and recognize it to this day. And the league itself became a marketing juggernaut. They were able to market these players better than any of the leagues out there, NFL included. And at that time, the league, you saw NBA likenesses on everything, whether it was cups, T-shirts, hats, socks. Guys wanted to be like Mike, as the old Gatorade commercial went down. And we were able to build each of our individual teams as, from a communication standpoint, of letting people know a little bit more about the players than you perhaps would have outside of just watching them on the TV. Because what we decided, I think the league decided to do, was to expand the fans' interest and also their ability to get behind the scenes and see what a Dan Dickow is like at home. What are some of his hobbies in addition to playing basketball? What is he like away from the court? And I think that gave fans a little bit more insight as to how players were from the field or the court, and provided some background into the fact that they weren't just athletes. They were human beings, and it also provided even more of an opportunity to broaden the brand. The NBA took its sport internationally, and I think they were the first, and they do it the best in terms of marketing the brand outside the United States. I mean, kids were playing basketball all over the world, but they certainly weren't following the NBA back in the days when I first joined. But based on the struggles we were having in the Olympics with college players, FIBA and NBA Commissioner David Stern decided to bring the professionals into the game to make the game more amenable to those who weren't able to see or touch or feel NBA basketball. And that brand expanded to Africa, India, Pakistan, Russia, Europe. It was all over the place. And it culminated with the Dream Team being at the games in 92. And that was the best team ever assembled. I don't think we'll ever see a team like that ever again. It doesn't matter who goes to the Olympics to represent the USA. That team was the first, and it was quite a collection of talent. And it was. I think the NBA has done a great job in marketing itself, giving fans an opportunity to see the players away from the court. It's the one sport where you can reach out and touch them. As we all know, I mean, you're sitting on a bench during a game, and you may be having a conversation during a timeout with a fan sitting right behind you. You're paying attention to your coach, obviously, and paying attention to what your team's doing. But there are times when players have the opportunity to talk to fans and engage a little bit with a child here and there. And I think those enhancements have made the NBA one of the best sports out there.
Yeah, I love how you say the NBA has done one of the best marketing jobs, if not the best, of all professional sports. I would agree. And they took that Dream Team experience and grew the game globally. And with the Last Dance documentary being released, and I would imagine you're the same way as me. They released two on Sunday, and they're going to keep doing these next couple weeks. I just wanted them to release all 10 at once. I was going to lock the kids out of the living room and just kind of watch them in continuation. I can only imagine they haven't all been released yet. You guys had two iconic games, being the Atlanta Hawks versus the Bulls that season. The reason I say they're iconic, one, you guys had a really good team. Mm-hmm. But two, you talked about the marketing in the NBA, but the marketing in the Atlanta Hawks also did a tremendous job that year from what I've read and what I've known is you had two of the top seven most attended NBA games in NBA history that year. One game had 45,000. The other set the all-time attendance record for a regular game, not an all-star game, over 62,000 people.
Yeah.
How in the heck did you guys prepare for a regular season NBA game like that?
Well, knowing that I had spent a year in Detroit and watching the Pistons play, they were playing at our then football facility, the Silverdome, as they built the Palace at Auburn Hills. And so they had the NBA record attendance figure. I think it was about 48,000. And I don't recall if that was set during a regular season game or a playoff game. But having been aware of that number, and knowing going prior to the 97-98 season that could be the last, well, it turned out to be the last season of Michael's run with the Bulls. And we had various discussions amongst our management team about how many people could we actually fit comfortably in the Georgia Dome. We were playing there 2 years. This was our last year playing at the Dome because we were building our new facility at the time called Phillips Arena. It's now called State Farm Arena. We wanted to try to give as many people as possible in the area the opportunity to see the game. We had a very good team ourselves. It was a playoff team: Steve Smith, Mookie Blaylock, Dikembe Mutombo, Christian Laettner, Tyrone Corbin, Alan Henderson. Cats like that were our top six players on the team. And we had some very competitive games, like most, against the Bulls. We got a few, they got more. But that first game when we sold, we actually sold the 45,000 seats, and we were playing in the end zone of what you would view as any NFL football stadium. And so we could have gotten more, but we didn't really want to push it at that time. And we ended up getting 45,000. So we had our next meeting, staff meeting, and I encouraged our staff. I said, can we, and no, I'm not the one calling the shots here. I'm the PR director. I had a boss and a couple of other bosses, and we came to an agreement that it would, after they were a little apprehensive about it at first, because a lot of those people wouldn't be able to see. Now, the Georgia Dome had the TV screens that would allow you to see the game from far away. And from a football standpoint, that was fine because the football field stretches 100 yards. Well, you take the end zone and you move seats over for a basketball game, that kind of limits your viewing potential. And so I said, hey, let's go for the record. It'd be nice for us to have this memory from this year. Maybe in the Guinness Book of World Records forever. Who at the time we didn't figure that anybody could top it because no one was playing in a similar stadium setup. And let's also hope that we win. But the one thing I kept thinking about in my mind was opening tip off, knowing how many flash bulbs go off for people taking pictures and something like that. I kept thinking, how electric would that be, opening tip-off of a game of a sellout at the Georgia Dome for a basketball game? And lo and behold, we sold a bunch of tickets for $5 in areas where people had difficulty seeing but just wanted the opportunity to be in the building. And we donated that money to, we had a major tornado come through North Georgia at the time. And so we donated proceeds from the $5 tickets to the relief efforts. And we ended up setting that record, 62,000, I think, or 61,000. My son is telling me in the background, 61,000. I think he's wrong. It was 62,045, I believe. And so, it was a great night. The Bulls won the game. It was a low-scoring game. I think 85-74 was the final score. But it gave a lot of people the opportunity to see Michael Jordan in action for the final time in Atlanta, who otherwise would only be able to see him on TV. And I guarantee you everybody to this day will probably say they were there, that they were sitting courtside or at least in vantage point to the Chicago bench or what have you, and they may have been sitting zones away from the basketball court. But it was a lot of fun playing those games. I think we split our games between Georgia Dome and Georgia Tech. We played about 9 to 11 games at Georgia Tech because we couldn't get every night we wanted at the Georgia Dome. But it was a nice memory. And I wouldn't be surprised. We talk about The Last Dance and how this episode 3 and 4 are upcoming. I did see that first game was a part of episode 2, I believe, and we beat them in that game, the Bulls we did, and the second game was in the month of March. So they're supposedly doing these episodes based on each month of the Bulls season. So as it gets closer to the March episode, if you notice a big football stadium game, that was the Hawks and Bulls and the 62,000 in attendance.
Well, I cannot wait to continue to watch this series. Now I'm going to be able to watch that with a little bit more of insider information. Art, I know it's been a while since we connected. I really appreciate the time. I'm sure some of our listeners, who a lot of them are coaches, parents, high school student athletes, as well as some college student athletes, will find some nuggets in this as they kind of pursue their goals and dreams within the sports world. So, Art, I appreciate it. You and your family stay safe.
And you do the same. Thanks again. Appreciate it, Dan. Good seeing you.
You too. Thanks.